Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. I have two things I have to do today as we wrap this series up. And if you have not been here, you will not be lost, but you're not gonna quite have the full picture of what we're doing. So I'm going to try to bring this together in a way that leaves us somewhere to really set our eyes and begin to really wonder. We've been talking about this idea of wonder and what it means and why we sort of lose it as we get into adulthood. When we're growing up, we are taught to play and to color and to create and to enjoy, and then we sort of get that beat out of us when we get into adulthood because we've got to act like adults, and we sort of forget about our stoke face, about seeing things and just going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that is so cool. We lose sense of that. And so the premise has been that these wise men have been obviously looking and researching and processing this for who knows how long, and probably had been out on multiple evenings, probably many evenings, looking for this star. They're searching for something, seeking after something, until one day they saw something that caused them to wonder. I wonder if that is the one that compelled them to continue, compelled them to move out. And that's really what this idea is about. We've got to see something that compels us towards something or to do something. And that's what I want to talk about today. And I've got to do two things. I've got to help you understand that stillness is absolutely essential for this to happen. If you're going to understand what it means to walk with God, to be loved by God, or really anybody for that matter, you have to learn how to be still. And we don't do this very, very easily. We talked about this in the first week of the series, or the second week of the series, talking about, and I shared with you some of my own personal explorations of that. And the second thing is that expression is also a part of this. It has to come out of us. And so that really leads me to the question I want to begin with is, what are you full of? Now, I just caused some of you to sin, didn't I? I don't talk like that, so it wasn't me. The reason it's so important for you to understand is because whatever you're full of is going to come out of you. It's just the way we're designed to work. Whatever you're filled with, whatever you're full of, comes out of you. And a lot of us, if we're honest, we're filled with our will and our desires and our ways. And we wonder why our lives feel so small and such a struggle and so hard. The reason is because your heart is looking for something that is worthy of its affection, and you ain't it, right? That's the essence of this. You cannot satisfy yourself by pursuing things for yourself. It will never work that way. And in fact, we know this almost instinctively. So the two things I have to do is, number one is to convince you that stillness is important. Number two is to help us understand what expression looks like. What I have done over the last few weeks is I've given you this this sort of way of thinking about life, and we use the phrase encounter, formation, and then this idea of expression. And so I'll just do it like this, and it's sort of a linear, or it's more of a circular thing, but you get the idea. And this has everything to do with what we set our eyes upon. So this is how I kind of put this in my notes. There's everything to do with what we gaze on. We've been talking about getting our gaze up and off of ourselves. This has to do right here with what's happening inside of you, with your heart. And so what I want to talk about today happens between here and here. And we are oftentimes very, very impatient with this, which is why stillness is absolutely critical. There's a place in us, in all of us, where when we get still, the rats sort of come out, right? The gnawing begins. The questions about our worth or our success or will it ever be any different or whatever it might be. And it's subtle in a lot of our lives, or maybe you've just gotten really good at containing it. But the reality is that when we get still, those things come out. And so we hide from them. We learn how to deal with them. We learn how to contain them. And I think about how I used to do this when I was a kid. Whenever life would get overwhelming, when I was 16 or 17, whenever life would get overwhelming to me, whenever I started to get like, oh my gosh, school, or oh my gosh, girls, or oh my gosh, my parents, I would get in my car, I would take out my favorite cassette tape, right? I would pop it in, and what do? You turn it up and you drive. I would say drive fast, but I had a Chevette. It didn't drive fast. It was just, I drove. But I can remember the soundtrack of those days, right? I remember Bon Jovi. I remember Van Halen. I remember Motley Crue. I remember Journey. I remember all of these, did y'all have a song that you would do that to? Okay, see, everybody, we had this picture. And this idea that songs and such have the really important part of what happens to us and sort of the soundtrack behind us. And it's always an expression. It's interesting to me that songs bring us to places, right? I can still hear a song today and remember the exact place and time that I either first heard it or what it meant to me. It was some picture in my head, right? I've been out in the ocean surfing by myself. I was out about a few weeks ago. I was looking, there was nobody out there, which always makes me nervous. I'm out there by myself surfing. It's foggy, and it's a beautiful day, but it's still real foggy. And you know what happens when you're out there and you're paddling around? You hear, da-dun, da-dun. And it's like as soon as that song starts, you're done. You can't get it out of your head. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, that's the theme for Jaws. Like, that's the big shark movie that ate everybody. Or perhaps if you hear Eye of the Tiger, bang, 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 you want to start dancing around and boxing somebody, right? It just takes you there, whatever your song is. Songs bring us to places. All of us have this place that a song brings us to. Songs bring us information, right? We know that Tommy used to work on a dock, right, because of a song. We know that a small town girl, right, and a city boy, they took a midnight train. We know that because of a song. There's all kinds of, some of you are going, I don't even get it. The reason is because you can't even think about it without the music behind it. But as soon as the song started, you would quote every line to it. There are Bible verses that I remember because I learned them in a song. In fact, you ask people who know the state capitals, go through all the state capitals or tell me all the states of the thing. They're going to give you a song about how they learned it. Right, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. It's like all these things are stuck in my head because of songs. And there's a difference between having a song stuck in your head and singing in your heart. You know that, right? If you said, let it go, it's over. And you're like, oh, can I get this out of my head? And this is the connection, because there are these places where we're able to go and there's a soundtrack to it. There's something that happens to us there that we need. This is not arbitrary. It's not unintentional. I've been asking people, stoic people who you kind of go, yeah, you ask them about music, what kind of music you listen to, what happens to you, and you begin to realize there are some deeper things about every single human heart and human soul. And that's what I want us to get in touch with, this place between what we see and what happens in our hearts, and really sort of stand there for a few moments and look at some things. The problem is, when we get still, often we get restless and we try to get out from underneath that. So music becomes an escape, or it takes us somewhere other than we want to be. And I want for us to stay there for a few moments. I want us to embrace and fight the restlessness that we feel whenever we get still. We're going to be talking about this in the next week after Christmas. We're going to, you know, encourage you to take 2 hours and do a personal retreat. 2 hours and do a personal retreat. We provide all the information for this. It's on our website. We'll be putting more about that out. In fact, I think it's up today on portcitychurch.org/retreat. But I cannot encourage you enough to do this. Because it is a way in which you can get still, you can sort of tackle the restlessness head on and begin to really understand what is happening in your heart instead of just, you know, chasing out or pushing out into life, because what you are full of is inevitably going to come out. We wonder, you know, the questions that come up are, what's wrong with me, or what did I do, or what if things will be different? This allows fear and anxiety and a sense of unworthiness and all these other things to sort of fill our lives. And guess what happens when those thoughts and feelings and emotions begin to fill our lives? We live our lives from that place. We express what we are full of. And it's not, listen, we've taught this, I know there's real things that happen, but there's also a way for you and I to find hope and healing and real, true life in this. And I believe this is what the gospel does for us. So this is what I want for us to do. We're going to look in Matthew chapter 2, and then we're also going to be looking in the book of Ephesians chapter 3, where we looked at last week. I want to make some more observations about this. But the idea that Jesus called us to seek first the kingdom of God is when he said to us, what I want for you to do is I want for you to seek the thing that you want more than anything else. Seek first his kingdom. We, by default, seek that which we want the most. And oftentimes what we want the most is we want to be loved. We want to feel like we matter. So we're always looking for people who will make us feel that way. This is why some of you are stuck in patterns of relationships, because you're always looking for someone to feel something, to do something for you. You're always grabbing and pulling to yourself. He's inviting us to align our hearts with what we want the most, and he's inviting us to align our hearts with the thing that is worthy of the heart's affection, the human heart's affection. And that, I believe, is King Jesus. And he calls our hearts by inviting us to see. He calls our hearts by inviting us to see. So let's make some observations. Matthew chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. And when they heard the king, basically they came into Jerusalem and said, "Hey, we've heard there's this king that's been born. He's the king of the Jews. Do you know where he's at?" King Herod goes, "What king of the Jews? I'm like the king. What are you talking about?" And he basically begins to conspire and try to figure out a way to get this rid of this king. He didn't like competition. That was kind of the way of things back there, back then. And so they calls him and say, "Hey, man, when you find out what's going on, let us know." That's what King Herod told these three wise men, which probably wasn't three wise men. It's probably an entourage, but there were three gifts, and that's why we believe there were three wise men. It says, after they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. This is a really interesting thing for me, because it's talked about the fact that when they, it seems like they got to Jerusalem and they didn't see the star, and then it comes back out again. And when they saw it, they were overjoyed. They were compelled again to search. So the first thing we noticed is that they actually simply saw something. Their eyes were set on something, and they noticed it. And they said, we think that's it. We believe that's it. And it compelled them to continue to go. And we're going to come back to this in just a moment, because this is what we're talking about. But they come there, and this is what I think is really interesting, because this begins to set our eyes on what we are looking for. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, Mary, and they bowed down, and they worshiped him. And then they opened their treasures. They presented him with gifts of gold, of frankincense, and myrrh, and they bowed down. Oh, wait. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Does it not talk about gifts? And then they opened their treasures. There we go. Maybe? Well, it says it in my Bible. It says, and then they opened up the treasures and presented him. I probably left something off when I sent it over. And then they presented him with treasures, presented him gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And y'all probably heard this and know this, so you know I'm not making this up. So I began to think about this, and I said, okay, what is myrrh, and what is the significance of frankincense, and what is the significance of gold? And so in my notes, I just sit down and I start thinking about like these gold coins, and you kind of try to, you know, just get your mind sort of slowed down enough. You know what gold is, right? And then you start thinking about frankincense is this incense that they used in priestly rites. It was an act of worship. And I know this because this is what the Old Testament teaches us. And myrrh was typically an embalming substance. It was something that was used to preserve the dead. So we're going to think about this. These kings come and they present these gifts and how prophetic they were, and it kind of helps us see what we're looking for. And I began to think about this. Over here, really, this is basically that Jesus came and he told us that he is our salvation. In other words, whatever you think is going to save you is not, he is. When you think that if you just had this relationship, or if you had that much money, or if you had this job, or if you had that, you think that's going to bring me life. He's like, no, actually, I'm going to bring you life. That your heart is looking for something worthy of the worship. And Jesus says, I am that thing. I am he to whom you're looking for. And so you got to kind of back up and go, okay, let me think about this. This idea of the priesthood, I think of it like this. It means that he stands with me. Because what the role of the priest was, to offer sacrifices on behalf of sinful people to a perfect God so God didn't kill the sinful people. It's a pretty simple system. God said, you're unholy, I'm holy. If you come into my presence, you'll die. And it's not because it was punishment. It's because God is so holy that when you get that close to him, it kills you. So God created a system, a sacrifice, where we would do things that God would accept, and when he accepted those things, it would prevent us from death. And when he sent Jesus, he said, Jesus is now the final sacrifice. And the idea of a priest was to mediate, to be the go-between God and us. And so Jesus becomes that for us. He became our righteousness. And we've talked about this in a lot of different series. But this idea of the king, of the gold, was that Jesus was a king. And I've been thinking about this because I get asked all the time. In fact, I just did an interview last week and someone asked me, what are the core issues that a Christian should believe? That's a great question, isn't it? What they want to know is, what are the four hot button topics? I'm like, what do you think about them? And I said, that's not interesting to me. I said, here's what the deal is. I said, the central thing that a Christian needs to believe, if you consider yourself a Christian, a follower of Christ, what you need to believe is that Jesus died for your sins and that he alone is the sacrifice for them. That a righteousness is not built on anything that you do or don't do. It is built on what you trust him for, and that he is with you and he gives you the life that you're looking for. Imperfectly as we are, as prone as I am to look at other places, the reality of what he has done for me still rings true and still holds true. And that's a part of it too. But also, Jesus has not invited us to be a part of a democracy. He's not interested in my opinion, and he's not interested in your opinion. He's not interested in what I think about issues, and he's not interested in what you think about issues. He is interested in, are you willing to submit to his authority in all things? That's what we need to believe. That's it. So what he's asking us to do when he says, seek first the kingdom, I think he's telling us to get our eyes on these three things, to set our sights on him, and particularly this one, that he is a king that is worthy of our allegiance. That's something that we all have to wrestle with. You see, the reason is not because he wants to rule in some way to get things done. He has invited us to be in a relationship with him that is built on love, that is grounded in love. It is the thing that we are all looking for. Every human being is looking to be loved. I mean, just listen to the songs that we write in our culture. All of them are about either love or jaded love, right? I always joke around. I said, man, if you mess up, you know, Carrie Underwood will destroy your car. Taylor Swift will write a song about you, and Adele will write an entire album about you, right? Because this idea, in fact, Taylor's written her last four albums about somebody. And so, but this idea that we get, we long to express some either fulfillment or love fulfilled, love received, or rejected. And we're all looking for this all the time. So this is where I want us to get our eyes open, because what I wrote down is what happens to us when we start to look, we notice some things, we have to see something that compels us to seek something. And I'm going to show you what I mean by this. And I'm going to show you how I read the Bible and see if we can kind of do this together at the end of our time and then see how this avails itself in expression. The reason is because love does one of two things. Love either allows you, when you are loved, either allows you to give yourself away, or when you are not loved, it forces you to manipulate other people to get them to make you feel the way you think you deserve to feel. It's always true. If you are not loved, if you do not have a deep sense of understanding that you are loved, you will always work to manipulate. And this is why oftentimes we can't be still, because when we get still, we begin to wonder. Sometimes it's even our relationships. What if you could just be still with your wife? Or what if your kids could just be still with you, and they could just be still and know that you are loved, instead of always trying to do something, to prove something, to earn something, to show you something? What if there were really a way? Because as long as you're doing something, you can sort of go on and say, yeah, I'm doing everything I need to be doing. I'm doing what I need to be doing. But it's in those moments of stillness where it kind of gets like, what do they really think about me? What do they really think about me? I mean, I don't have time to get into that. But you have to start looking for something, putting your eyes on something, seeing something. Love always overflows in a creative expression. I'm going to tell you what I mean by this. Because people think, like, you got to write poems or songs. I was thinking about this because, you know, my wife and I have been having this battle this year. Well, not a battle. She won. It wasn't even a battle. It was over Christmas decorations. Every year I try to get out of it. And every year I seem to wind up with more. I think I'm up to 5 trees now. And only one of them spins because our other 2 spinning trees or the stands have burned out. And I can't fix anything, so I just threw them away and leaned the trees up against the wall. I'm just kidding. And this has been her line this year. She says, I said, Julie, do we have to put up another tree? She says, I can't help it if I have joy in my heart. And there's no argument, right? So we're buying Christmas presents. We're like, we're going to get this for our kids. We're going to get this for our kids. And I'll tell you, my wife is one of the most genuine people that I have ever met. And if you know her, you know that's true. I said, I think a large reason, people ask me, I said, Mike, what would you do if you weren't married to Julie? I said, someone else would be the pastor of Port City Church. I'm pretty sure that she's a lot of the reason why I am who I am. So her and Jesus. And so she's racking her brain trying to get the gifts for our kids. And this is every year. And this year it finally dawned on me. I'm like, because we think that like to love someone means you have to, you know, write some cool song or write some poem or some, you create a piece of artwork. But it's the creative expression is longing to do something for another person in such a way that they feel loved. And your heart is made for this. It's made for this. I think that's part of the reason this thing we're doing tomorrow is so important, is just to incline yourself to do something for another human being without needing anything from them, without making sure that they know and go, hey, look at me, and you got what you needed from them. So number one is you have to see something in such a way that compels you to seek after it. You have to see something in such a way that compels you to seek after it. And then the third part of this, and the way I wrote this in there is we see enough to compel us to seek. We seek enough in order to see. And what I mean by that is you've got to get, it's not just getting back to here. It really is this idea of learning how to stop and be still and just behold and take it in. This is what happens to us. The beauty of what Emmanuel, God with us, Christmas is about is that God came to dwell with us. Emmanuel is God with us. It's this part right here. He is with us. He mediates for us. The life with God is all around us. Richard Foster writes about it like this. He says, this isn't an intellectual proposition or a mere doctrinal adherence. It's not a tell me what to believe and I'll believe it, or tell me what to do and I'll do it. It is a reality that unfolds before us in breathtaking detail, mediated by our actual experience. The life with God is something you actually live in the real world, in your real day-to-day grind. It's there and it's available. When we don't seek his kingdom, when we don't seek his kingdom first, guess where our eyes always go? If you're not seeking his kingdom, guess who you're seeking? Probably your own. And you're probably doing it in such a way to try to get people to make you feel the way you think that you deserve to feel. That's why you're disappointed in the relationships that you have. Because you think that you deserve to feel it, and you're using other people, you're grabbing other people to try to get them to do this. John Ortberg, in one of the best books I've read recently, is a book called Soul Keeping. I've mentioned it before. But he writes about this, and he describes this. He describes this as a state of lostness. There's no orientation as to what really matters. And he says, in the absence of a stubborn stare, this relentless gazing at the king, looking at the king and his kingdom, he says, we live in worry and anger and self-importance and pettiness. So I'm reading this and I'm just stopping. We live, when we don't gaze at the kingdom, we don't stop and take hold or take in, we wind up living in worry, in anger. Anybody check that box yet? Self-importance. Pettiness. I'm like, anything else you want to pile on there? When we don't seek first the kingdom, we end up living in this sort of self-absorbed way when the life with God is all around us. What if that were true? Like, what if his life were really available to you? How would you go about getting it or taking hold of it? This is what we learned last week. This prayer that Paul prayed, we're going to read this again. Paul says, I pray that out of your glorious riches, out of God's glorious riches, he may strengthen you with power in your inner being so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that being rooted and established in love, you may have power together with all the Lord's people. Hold it right there. So that Christ may dwell in your hearts. He wants for us to be strengthened so that Christ will dwell in our hearts. And I pray that you'll be rooted and established in love together with all of us. It's this whole kind of grouping thing. Now, as I began to noodle on this, here's what I noticed. A couple of things. Number one is that there's this idea of Christ dwelling. We've got to stop here and begin to come, because we're looking at, it says, when we see his kingdom, what happens to our hearts? And he says, I'm praying that two things will happen, that somehow this concept, this reality, that thing that you're looking for more than anything else will come and it will take root. You'll be rooted and you'll be established in love. There'll be this security in which you live from that place. He's pointing us back. He's saying that something has to happen in here. You have to stop. And he tells us, he says, I'm praying that there'll be this thing that happens. You'll get the strength where you are rooted and established in love. And he also talks about the fact that Christ will dwell there. This doesn't mean that he's your guest. This means that he actually resides and has authority. For him to come and to dwell in your heart means you have sort of moved out of the king's seat and you have given it to him. That's the picture here. He says, I want for you to have this strength so that he will reside in you, and in his residency and his authority, you're going to be rooted and established in love, and you no longer need these other things. And then he goes on, he says this, and he says, what I'm praying for is that you'll be rooted and established so that, and here's the reason, so that you can grasp. So that you can grasp how wide and how long and how deep is the love of Christ, and to know that to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to all the fullness of God, to the measure of all the fullness of God. What are you full of, right? See? What he's telling us, and again, we have to decide if we believe this or not. Because he's telling us that if you're going to allow, if there's going to be this, and some of you are, some of this has happened to you, you know it's there, but it just takes so much effort to stay there because we're so busy and we're so distracted. He says that this idea of us being rooted and established in love, he's praying that we will be able to actually look up and see how wide and how long and how high and how deep is Christ's love for us, so that we remain rooted and established in his love, and so that everything in our lives flows from that place. You don't get this without stopping. Without stopping. The word, the idea of grasping, we talked about this last week, but the idea of grasping isn't this desperate attempt to cling or to possess in that sense, like as though we don't have it. It's to take it in. When he tells us to grasp, he's talking about gazing and looking at it, to stop and take it in such a way that it takes over. He wants for you to grasp how wide and how deep and how high and how long is his love, so that it will take over and that you are free to love other people. This is the picture of how this works. So I sat down and I said, okay, what does this do? What's the connection here? Because we're talking about this idea that whatever we are full of sort of is what gets expressed. When we take something in such a way, when we grasp this, it says that the reason he wants us to grasp this is so that we will be filled to the full measure, to the full measure of all that he's designed us to be. He doesn't want there to be one room, one crevice, one spot where his love doesn't overtake. And what's so beautiful about that is when his love, when we are truly washed over like that, it displaces everything else. The way I thought of this and wrote this down in my journal is that what you are full of is displaced by what you are filled with. And so my question to you is, how often do you grasp so that you are filled to the full measure? Because if you're not, guess what's coming out? This is the picture. And so how do we do this? What do we do? I want to make a couple more observations between these two things. And I do think it centers on being still. And my whole life, I was told to sit still because I never did. So you can imagine. This is not easy. It is imperative. The life with God is all around you every single day. It is all, if we will just notice it, if we will see it enough to seek it, and seek it enough to stop and ponder and understand and take it in, we will see it everywhere. We'll see it everywhere. To be still is to seek. We're going to do this in just a moment. To be still is to seek. To actively look. Not just to notice, but to actively go, okay, God, I see what you're saying, or I get a glimpse of what Mike's talking about, so I'm going to just fix my eyes on you in stillness. I'm going to allow the rats to come out. I'm just going to bring them into where you are. This is what Jesus talks about. He says, cast your cares on me. Cast your burdens on the Lord, for he is most careful with you. It's 1 Peter. Psalm 22, it says that if we cast our cares on him, he will not allow our feet to stumble. There's this rooted and established place that we live from. To be still is to seek. To be still is to allow. To allow. Right? You ever try to feed a kid? You just strap them in their high chair and they're going. And you're like, hold still. And you're like jamming the thing in their eyes and their ears and you're trying to. Rah! I think sometimes that's what God's doing to us. We're like, And to be still is simply to allow his love to wash over us. Like, there are times when I have to do this. I remember in marriage, you know, and I've learned this over the years, and it's so funny how this happens. Because, like, our 10-year wedding anniversary, my wife and I, we went to Walmart to buy beach chairs. I remember thinking, what have we become? This is 10 years. We're supposed to be like doing something like, you know. And there's a way in which this stillness just kind of allows the love to just permeate. Right? You know what I'm talking about? Some of you don't. You should try it. To be still allows God to love you. Right? When's the last time you've just allowed him? And I don't mean trying to earn it, right? You got to be still. You got to stop trying, stop grasping, stop trying to say, well, God, I did this. Just go, no. I'm just going to be still. You just allow him to put the spoon in your mouth and to fill you with his love. You just put your hands down. For some of you, it may need a seatbelt for a little while like a kid in a high chair. That's okay. And the third is to be still is to be loved. I really think those moments of stillness where God just does it. Look at the cross. You know, there's songs that I listen to. I remember there's one of my favorite songs is His Grace Flows Down and Covers Me. It's probably 15 years old. And it's Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound. It talks about seeing his love flowing down. And I remember I'm reading the book of Leviticus, which is all about the sacrifice of the Old Testament covenant. I'm listening to this song in my head. And I just hear this. His grace flows down and covers me. It covers me. And it just gives me this picture, this place to just be still and to allow myself to be loved by God. You need these places. So my question, we're going to close with this familiar Christmas carol that says, oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore. You know this song. What does that really mean? We sing it, and you'll sing it. You're like, that's my favorite Christmas carol, right? It's the one that Miss Brady sang when her voice came back from the Brady Bunch. So you're like, you're right, by the way. I was 9 years old. I remember this. Some of you have no idea who the Brady Bunch is. But what would it be like to just for a moment, to just adore Him, Christ the Lord? So I'm going to help you. This is how I do this in my own time, and we're going to do it together. Psalm 63. I'm going to read this to you. I want you to look at some. I want you to pay attention. We're going to see this just in a glance. I want you to kind of find in your own head and heart what grabs on. You, God, my God, earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. I have seen you in your sanctuary. I've seen you in your sanctuary. I've beheld, seen your power and your glory. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. I will be fully satisfied as with the richest of foods. With singing lips, my mouth will praise you, and on my bed I will remember you. I will think of you through the watches of the night because you are my help. And so I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand holds me. Now, if you're like me, you're going, oh, there's so much there. You know, oh, this is so cool. You start underlining stuff. And you saw it. But what are you seeking? So I began to narrow in, and this is what I noticed. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I want you to just look at it for just a moment. What starts to pop in your head? See, you're seeing things, you're observing things. What starts to pop in your head? For me, it was this idea that his love is better than life. And so I began to seek that. What would it be like? Because I think life is better like this. This is life. How is his love better than this? And I sort of let my mind go there because I've got things that I want to do, things I want to accomplish. And here he is going, because your love is better than life. And so I began to seek that. I began to look. I began to just stare at that and try to comprehend it. And here's what kind of happens. I noticed that it's big. His love is big. Right? Because I don't think his love is better than life. My life is big and his love is small, but when he says that his love is better than my life, it means that his love is big. And I may not understand it, I may not know it, but I sort of confess that, God, your love is big. Right? Isn't that what he prayed, God? I mean, isn't that what Paul prayed? That you'll grasp how big his love is? Why do you think that? Why would God want you to grasp how big his love is? The reason may be because he knows that our quest to build our own lives is greater and more powerful drive than almost anything else. And if we don't see how big his love is, we'll never understand that it's better. So he wants us to gaze at it until we understand that. Does that make sense? So you just sort of notice these things. And then you let yourself sort of adore, worship, ponder that. And in that, what begins to happen is that this soundtrack begins to unfold, and we no longer see it the way we used to. It becomes something different. So we're going to do together in all of our campuses, and I'm going to invite the bands to come out, and we're going to sing a Christmas carol together. We're going to do this, and for some of you, this will be an absolute just declaration of your faith. God, I do. You are my King. You are my Lord. I do that. For some of you, it'll be kind of an open-handed, could this be? Could this be? But either way, what I want is for you to be still long enough to allow God to love you and to just pay attention to what it is that you see. Could we stand together in all of our campuses? Can we stand together? I'm going to pray for us, and then we're going to finish together. Father, I thank you for your goodness. I thank you for your kingship. And as we seek first in these moments, just to set our sights on you, that you are with us, you have saved us, that you are in authority over us. God, let us begin to grasp how wide and how long, how high and how deep, that we would see your love is better than our life. Hard to believe. So God, let us see it. And I ask all this in the name of your Son, whom we adore.